Welcome to the Professional Plumber Podcast. We hope that these podcasts will bring some insight into who we are and what we do. So while in conversation with the PIRB, sit back, enjoy, and make sure to connect with the PIRB on Facebook or at pirb.co.za for more.
A warm welcome to our audience. My name is Willem Klopper. I'm your host. And in this episode, we will discuss angle valves and the typical or most commonly made mistakes with angle valves. With me in studio, I have Richard Bailey as usual for a lacquer tech talk. And welcome, Richard. Thanks for joining me in studio.
Hey, hi, Willem. Yeah, welcome. Thank you very much for the welcome. And thanks for having me again. As always, it's a pleasure. And yeah, just a nice, short, sweet, discussion, I guess, on angle valves and what we find out there in the field.
We'll give our guests the opportunity to introduce themselves right after this.
Don't forget to download the all-new and improved App Plumber from the Google Play Store. All your plumbing solutions are just a click away, exclusively for Android users.
Richard, so we say angle valves, but exactly what is an angle valve? What are we referring to when we say angle valves?
Yeah, I suppose that's the good place to start. Hey, what is an angle valve?
Is it a valve that's at an angle?
Yes. Yeah. We install that valve deliberately skew so that it's at a 45 degree angle. We call Philip, that's not it. No. Angle valve, I guess, is a generic it's a term that is used for a particular fitting. And most typically what an angle valve is, it's the last shut off valve, before you, reach the terminal fitting. Now, but let's clarify what a terminal fitting is. A terminal fitting is, for example, a basin mixer or a sink mixer. That is a terminal fitting. Terminal being last or final fitting in the system. So it's the last fitting in the system. So that's a tap, and that's that tap where water actually comes out for the consumer. So before that terminal fitting, one would typically find, not always, but sometimes, a lot of the times increasingly, you'd find these angle valves, and that's the shutoff valve, which is directly before that terminal fitting. And the reason we call them angle valves is because they are usually designed they are shaped into a 90 degree angle. So essentially you've got a vertical wall surface. You have then the back of the angle valve horizontally going into a fitting into the wall, and then with incorporating the shutoff mechanism, your outlet or the downstream side of that shutoff valve is usually, and I say usually because not always, but usually at a 90 degree angle to the horizontal plane of the back of the angle valve. So that's why we call it an angle valve. Okay. But it's basically a shutoff valve right before a terminal fitting. It usually has a male threaded outlet. So what I mean by that is, and what's different, why I'm mentioning that is, it's not like an inline shutoff valve where you would have a connection to a pipe connection to a pipe connection. The outlet to it is usually threaded, and it's a male, and that is usually, and I'm using the word usually a lot because I'm talking about the vast majority of them.
Yeah, there may be instances where it's not the same.
That's right. You know, I don't want to throw a blanket over every single one, but the vast majority of them, and the ones that we are talking about today, have got a male thread, and those are intended to be used as connectors for flexible connectors. So the female nut of a flexible connector would then screw onto the male portion of the angle valve, and that then goes off to the terminal fitting.
Okay.
Willem, also another thing to keep in mind, and perhaps a further distinction from what we would usually call a shutoff valve or a normal shutoff valve, it's not supposed to be used as an inline shutoff valve. So it shouldn't be used within the system, further upstream of the system, like where you want to isolate portions of a building, for example. These valves are not designed to be inline shutoff valves. They are supposed to be used right at the wall surface just before the terminal fitting. So that's a further distinction.
Okay. So because my next question would have been, you know, why would they typically be installed? For what reason would they be used and typically be installed? And another question, just to add on top of that question, is are they a requirement?
Mm. Yeah, that's a good question, because it's not a requirement. There are exceptions. The fact that they are not a requirement, sometimes they are a requirement. They don't need particularly to be angle valves. Let me just say that. But there is a requirement that some sort of isolating valve is installed, for example, before a storage tank, a water storage tank, or a toilet cistern. So over there, you would need to install some shut-off valve. It need not be an angle valve, but very often these days, it's the easiest way to do it. And so it is. So in that instance, if it's fulfilling that role, it is a requirement, but usually it's not. Like, for example, when it's installed, when they are installed before a basin mixer, let's call it, that is not a requirement, but it's a very, very nice to have, because if you want to change a cartridge or even service any portion of the basin mixer or a sink mixer, for that matter, a portion that is within the pressurized part of the tap, so that you either have to switch off the whole house's water supply, or you just go to these little angle valves underneath and you close them off, and Bob's your uncle. The rest of the house is unaffected, and you are now able to easily work on the mixer at the kitchen sink or bathroom basin, whatever the case may be. So it's a nice to have, and there's no doubt that it's a good practice to do it that way to minimize disruption to the rest of the water supply. And this is especially important in, let's say, for example, ablution blocks within public spaces, for example, I don't want to say hotels, but perhaps restrooms, etc., where you've got three or four basins next to one another. One of them is giving a problem. You don't want to have to shut off the entire restrooms, or in fact, maybe even the male and the female restrooms water supply, just to service one faulty basin mixer, which could take a while. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it very much allows for easy maintenance. In fact, in my opinion, this is just my humble little opinion, but I think it's somewhere along the line, it should become a requirement that those sorts of installations have separate isolating valves. But it's not. It's not a requirement, but it is a very, very good practice to do so.
And convenient for that matter.
Very much so. I can, as a maintenance plumber, go and isolate that one basin, mark it and show that it is out of use, and then take that cartridge or the mixer and go and find a replacement for it, and take half an hour to repair that thing if necessary, quite happily, because I'm not disrupting anybody else. Whereas if it wasn't there, I would be under tremendous pressure, and so would the management and everybody else be under tremendous pressure to get that thing fixed, and that, you know, that's not so lekker.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to close off the main supply at your house, the main water supply at your house, to say, okay, I'm going to go and fix this one basin mixer's cartridge, and therefore I'm closing off, because it's me and my family in my house, so nobody else will be affected by me closing off this main supply. But when it comes to public services like hotels, restaurants, shopping centers, shopping malls, those kind of things that have multiple taps and multiple. So now you have to sort of the other consumers and patrons of the mall will be affected if you close up the main supply just to fix one cartridge. So it's very convenient, whether it's a
very
requirement
much so.
Or not. Okay.
Very much so.
Easy maintenance. That's what you said. It's good practice, considered good practice. But it's definitely not a standard requirement at this point in time. Although it's considered good practice, it is convenience because it does allow for easy maintenance.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Richard, so what should plumbers be careful not to do when they install these angle valves? What are the typical mistakes that they make with them?
Yeah, and I think this is now the reason why we're having this little podcast, is that as a my role as an auditor, I come across many installations, and often I see angle valves being utilized with good intentions, but just not in the correct manner. So there's two main things. Now I'll run through a number of things, but there's two main issues which I come across quite often. The first one is the, you know, I have a term which I use, when I'm sure all construction plumbers use different terms, but I used to use the terms first fix and second fix. And the first fix is everything pretty much within the wall, and the second fix is everything pretty much outside the wall. And what we would term that stuff outside the wall is, I would term it, is furniture. I call it furniture. So the basin itself, the toilet itself, the bath, whatever, is furniture. The tap covers of the under tile stop tap is furniture, and so on. And so is an angle valve. Now, and this is one of the things that I see very, very often. So typically what would happen, or what I would deem correct practice, is that your supply, hot and cold supply pipes, let's call it to a basin, would be plumbed into the correct places. And then you would put some sort of a female fitting to, in future, accept the male portion, the back portion of that angle valve, and it goes into the wall surface. You would then plug those two female fittings with a replaceable or a removable plug for further or future use. Mm-hmm. Right. So what then happens, instead of doing that, a lot of plumbers, for some other reason, I've seen that they use the actual angle valves themselves as the plugs. And this is, remember, at a stage of the building process that the wall sometimes hasn't even been plastered. Maybe it's been plastered, but it hasn't yet been tiled. Maybe it's been tiled, but the cabinetry that is housing the basin hasn't yet been installed. So now the back of this angle valve typically would have a cover plate, a little circular plate, which is in a large diameter, which kind of free sliding. And it would, its purpose is then you need some sort of a ugly hole to screw this angle valve into the wall surface. But, and this plate then would just cover that hole and make the whole thing neat. Now imagine, okay, this cover plate is not removable. So imagine now you put it in, you have to tile, so you tile around the cover plate. Now the guy comes with the cabinetry, it cuts a hole bigger than the cover plate, and it's terribly untidy. So I've seen it quite often that guys use this as part of the first fix and not the second fix. So that's the first big mistake. So please, guys and consumers, if you see one of these shiny, bright, chrome-plated angle valves being installed before the final fix, it's a problem. Address it with your plumber and ask the question why it's been done like that. You should just have a temporary plastic or metal plug that you put in there, which is then removed as the furniture is being installed. So that's the first big mistake I see. The second mistake, and this isn't entirely plumber's fault. I think it's the manufacturers of these angle valves. Some of them are manufactured with an internal diameter, the back end of the angle valve with the male thread that is supposed to go into the wall, that internal diameter of that is exactly 15 millimeters. And I don't know if it's by on purpose or if it's by mistake, but the fact that it's exactly 15 millimeters, it makes it the same internal size as a, let's say, a typical compression fitting that one would use for a copper pipe or any other, well, an improved piping system that uses compression fittings. So what plumbers do is they use the back end of the angle valve as a fitting. So they would shove the pipe straight into the back end of the valve, use a compression nut and cone to tighten it onto the actual angle valve itself without using an additional fitting in between. And that, it's a little bit technical, Willem, but it's not supposed to be done like that. If we consider the myriad of standards and specifications that any water fitting needs to be subjected to as for its purpose. This angle valve, yes, it does comply, and we'll get there Let's assume that it complies to its standard, and it does have its particular standard, mm-hmm. but that standard does not include, it's not the same standard as a compression fitting. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
So whichever way you cut it, it might work and it might be just fine for 10 years, but that whichever way you cut it, it is probably not a compliant connection. So please, plumbers out there, you'll know what I'm about to say. Please use female adapters, or whether you've got wall surface or you're connecting to pipes, please use female adapters before you connect to the angle valve. So that's the second big mistake I see. By the way, that will not be passed by an audit. If an auditor comes across a connection like that, it would need to be rectified because it's not an approved fitting.
All right. So plumbers can merely, you know, they can be proactive and do it the correct way, or, you know, take the risk of being audited and then having to drive back to site to go and fix that.
I suppose that's one of the risks, but the bigger risk actually, Willem, for a plumber doing it that way is that, let's say one of those fittings or one of those connections comes loose and it doesn't, for some other reason, seal, or you've cracked the body of the angle valve, whatever the case may be, and you flood and you cause damage.
You flood, you see a leak in a wall, against a wall.
Yeah. An investigation ensues, and it is found by whoever it is, if they're savvy. Let's say the insurer identifies the fact that this is a non-compliant connection, refuses to pay the claim. Hmm. Now
it's a loss to the consumer.
It sits squarely on the plumber's shoulder. It can be shown that he did not follow proper practice. So it now becomes his liability. And that's a greater risk than failing an audit, you know. So you're failing an audit, you can go and rectify. But this now, it's the horse is already bolted, and that becomes a bigger risk.
Yeah, it's an inconvenience, it's a damage and a loss to the consumer, the person who the work was done for.
Exactly. And it's a big risk, liability risk financially, and all kinds of things, you know, for the plumber, for the installer as well. So it's a bad situation all around. And it's like, for example, I'm just going to think of something off the top of my head, using a completely, like, for example, using polypropylene piping with compression fittings. It's never been approved. Yes, we've seen it being used hundreds or maybe even thousands of times. But that one time where it fails, it can be shown that it is not an approved system and that you have not followed due diligence, and therefore it is your fault that this has failed. Oh, no, but I was taught like this, and I mean, I see you guys do it like this, and no, doesn't matter. Show me where it's an approved system. It's not. So it's the same principle. Okay. Yeah, there's one more thing, Willem, that I just want to, and I suppose it's a secondary to those two main things that I said, but I've seen angle valves being used as inline shutoffs. And earlier I said, you know, what is an angle valve? It is right before the terminal fitting. I've seen angle valves being used in systems, in ceiling spaces, as part of the reticulation system. I've seen these little angle valves being used, and that is an absolute no-no. Please, guys, do not use them as inline shutoff valves. That is not what they have been designed for. So anytime you see an angle valve within a reticulation system, other than servicing a terminal fitting, it's probably questionable. Okay. That's the third big no-no, I suppose, or the secondary no-no. If you'd like me to just elaborate a little bit on what I would call good practice, this isn't really terribly, you couldn't call
mistakes that I made.
Yeah, mistakes that I made, but it's just perhaps my perfectionism coming through. I can't stand it when angle valves are not equidistant and level and at the same level and coming out of the wall straight. And I want a point to be, you know, those two angle valves underneath the basin. Plumbers will know what I'm talking about. They must be level. And if you put a level across them. Also, one mustn't face up and the other one face down and or left or right. It's just untidy. Even though it's hidden, you know, just take some pride in it. And you've got this, if you've got this perfect triangle with your waste pipe and then your two anger valves, and that forms a nice triangle, almost an equilateral triangle, that's beautiful. It looks beautiful. So that's just, my personal stuff coming through.
Okay. And what about the height of the fixture?
Yeah. That would be it. I mean, of course, that would come into it. So, if they're both at the same height and equidistant from one another, as I said, forms a triangle. It looks fantastic. The height, obviously you'd need to take care of making sure that they are at the correct height. I mean, you can't have them coming out above the basin, but I mean, we all know that, but sometimes actually that you mentioned it, guys put it too close to the terminal fitting and you've got to really kink those flexible pipes to get them to fit. And that's not so lekker either. And another nice thing about these valves, Willem, is that, when you have put them in right before the terminal fittings, they are right there and easy to use as mechanisms to flush the line. So before you actually connect the terminal fitting and subject that cartridge to whatever debris is in the line, you can easily use that valve as a flushing mechanism and get that line clear and thoroughly flushed before you connect the terminal fitting. So that's an additional advantage of having these anger valves installed before terminal fittings.
Before we continue with our conversation, have a listen to this.
Plumber training has never been easier with articulated plumber courses. Enroll now to upskill yourself at your own pace and earn CPD points. Our informative and easy to follow courses can be found on iopsitraining.co.za. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Articulated Plumber.
All right, so you briefly mentioned earlier in the conversation about the compliance of these valves. Are they compliant? Are they deemed compliant?
Sure, but as a material, and as a, like everything else, you know, there's lots of manufacturers and so on. So the valve itself has got a standard. An anger valve must comply with a particular standard, and that is SANS 1750. So the plumber that is installing these valves must be sure that that particular make or brand or manufacturer, whatever that is, complies with its 1750 SANS standard. An easy way for a plumber to check whether or not it complies with that standard is to see whether it's listed on an acceptable or a reputable body such as Jaswick, whether it's got an SABS stamp of approval, perhaps a watermark, SA watermark. So that's an easy way to check whether it is. So then you don't have to go and check the compliance with 1750.
Mm-hmm.
But failing that, remembering that it's not compulsory for a stamp to be indelibly marked on the thing. So you're not going to see a Jaswick acceptance mark on it. Okay. You're going to have to go and do that homework for yourself to see that it is compliant, to see that it is listed. If it's not listed anywhere, you can still – you can still go and check whether it is compliant and do that due diligence. And remember, we're referring back to SANS 1750.
Yeah.
But one thing that all of them must be, and all terminal fittings and all inline fittings and that sort of thing, is DZR brass. And very often that marking does appear on them, either as a DZR or DR. DZR brass is dezinctification resistant brass. It's a special type of brass. And it's not a cheap brass. It's actually quite expensive to manufacture. So there is an incentive to not have it as DZR brass, I suppose, for manufacturers. And it's also worth mentioning that South Africa is one of the few, and I'm not going to pretend to know what the other countries are, but I know that not many countries require their fittings to be DZR. We are one of the few.
Okay.
So it's very possible that an approved article somewhere else in another country lands here and is not approved because it's not made out of DZR. So, the bottom line is the onus is on you and I as installers to check.
Absolutely.
To make sure that it does comply.
Yeah, I mean, the consumer wouldn't know.
No, certainly not. Yeah. Look, I've come across, and we all have as plumbers, we've all come across, I remember being called out not so long ago to, the Atlantic Beach Golf Estate, which is here in Melkbosstrand in Cape Town. It's quite a high end up market. You know, houses start from like 4 mil, go up to 12, 15 mil. So.
Okay.
And I get called out. It was a Saturday morning, and the neighbor called me out because she knew me, but her neighbor's house seemed to be flooding. So we go there. We eventually, with the permission of the state security, break down the door because there's nobody there. They're on holiday. Mm. And we get inside, and one of these little angle valves has literally broken itself off at the neck as it goes into the wall surface. And it has been, it literally put 4.5 inches of water across that entire house. Entire house. It was coming out the front. It was dammed up against the front door. When we broke the front door, it was like a gushing of water coming out, like 4 inches of water coming out that front door. So, and that was from one angle valve that probably cost 20 rand that should have cost 50 rand. Okay. Yeah. So that's 30 rands worth of saving. Yeah. And by the way, that was a pewter, article. And these pewter angle valves are prevalent. You find them all over the place. And please, guys, don't use pewter angle valves. It's just going to come and bite you in the butt.
Just listening to that incident and the damages that it must have gone, you know, associated with it. I mean, crikey,
Moses. Incredible.
Yeah.
That was just next to a toilet. It was one of their guest loos that is very seldom used. But the whole thing had just popped straight off it. And if you're a plumber, we've all seen that, what happens to that pewter body of that thing. It just starts to crumble.
Just before wrapping up this conversation, have a listen to this. We'd like to encourage our audience to follow Articulated Plumber on Instagram and Facebook to learn more about any exciting and interesting news that we may have. Our handle on both Instagram and Facebook is Articulated Plumber. Richard, I want to thank you for this conversation, this discussion that we had. Surely you've shared very valuable information with the audience. I hope that they've learned something from today's discussion. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your effort. And then obviously thanks to the audience for having tuned in.
No, it's only a pleasure, Willem. Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to the next Lekker Technical discussion.
Thanks for having tuned in. Make sure to read more about the PIRB on our website at pirb.co.za and on our social media channels like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.